Folks, ladies and gentlemen, what is up, folks? 3Wide Nation, Eddie Greer, a.k.a. EG3. One more time for the 3Wide NASCAR podcast with EG3. I'm usually coming at you from Manhattan, Kansas, where I currently live, but the E3Wide pod back on the road one more time, getting ready for a half marathon at this look. At a half marathon tomorrow out there in Oswanami, Kansas. I am right now at a hotel. I am not going to say right now that this at a, what do they call it? A non-disclosed location, something like that, along with that. But I'm recording here at a non-location hotel, whatever you want to call it here, recording this interview, the special guest interview, the special edition interview coming at you. I'm recording on Friday, February 24th, 2023 here. And right now I am interacting with our special guest here coming up here in a few minutes. Well, folks, coming up, obviously I'm recording this ahead of Auto Club weekend, interacting with our special guest here coming on here shortly. So this is going to be the start of the West Coast trip for the NASCAR Cup Series mainly. And of course, we're going to be seeing, of course, in and out, whether it's the Craftsman Truck Series or the Xfinity Series. In this case, it's going to be a doubleheader weekend with the Xfinity Series tomorrow and, of course, the Cup Series on Sunday, with the last time we're going to see these Cup drivers, really Xfinity Series and Cup drivers, with the original layout, the 2.5 mile raceway out there in Fontana, California. And we have seen our share of memories out there, and kind of sad to see it go. Obviously, there's going to be no racing at that track next year because of all the planning and construction going on out there out west. So this race has seen a share of blowouts, as far as, well, blowouts meaning runaway victories, and of course we've seen our share of some tight, close finishes, entertaining finishes as well there as well. I'm gonna take a little detour here and check out our special guest is gonna be on here in just a few moments here. So I'm gonna quickly here run down the lap leaders here of this old track here. And of course, one of those guys is hometown boy Kevin Harvick from Bakersfield, California. He has led only a total of 238 laps on this racetrack here, which is going to be again converted into a short track between after the end of this race is over and the new date, which is 2025. And next time we'll see these guys out here out west, folks, will be 2025. Casey Kane, folks, is from lowest to the most here, working from upwards here. 269 laps here. He has one win on a racetrack, back up to Harvick, also one win as well. Next in line, that would be we're going back to the good old days, baby, with Greg Biffle, 297 laps led. He has a win at AC. And of course, the president of all 2311, that I'm talking about, folks, Kurt Busch. He, folks, did lead 298 laps. He has a win here at the Speedway. And of course, Mark Martin is next in line. He did run over 5,000 laps of this race on the track. Excuse me, I keep getting that mixed up. It's been a kind of a long day traveling, and now at a hotel at a location that I'm not going to reveal. Obviously, I know it's not going to matter because this will be out when I get back to Manhattan. I will upload this, and this will be out on Sunday with our special guest coming up. And I'm going to go ahead and say the name, and I believe this is him right now. So we're going to be breaking away from this right now. Come on back, folks. We'll be back in a little bit here on this edition of the podcast. Again, EG3 in the building here. Let me get this set up here. Sorry, I'm a little late to the game as far as getting things set up here, but everything's ready to go. I just got to play this breaking music here, and we will come back on the other side of that and have our special guest, which is going to be Phil Spain from the Pit Box. We'll have him on in just a few moments here. Let me find where I want to go. There we go. So we're going to come back. We're going to take a short break and come back on the other side. You'll hear my conversation with, let me see here, with Phil Spain, folks, of the Pit Box Press. And on the other end, we might finish this up, or I'm just going to end it where it is. So sorry for the combobulation of this podcast. This came kind of a last minute deal here. And Phil wanted to come on to the podcast, so I apologize for all the rambunctiousness early on in this podcast, but I'll get it together here in a few moments. We're going to step aside here on the 3-Wide NASCAR Podcast, EG3, everything from the big three divisions of all the NASCAR Truck Series, Craftsman Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and of course, the NASCAR Cup Series. We'll be back in a few moments. I've never been out there before, so I'm looking forward to exploring that. It's going to be a trail race out there, so I'm looking forward to doing that as well. I've never been to the location where I'm at right now as well, so it had everything for me waiting. So I guess I hit the jackpot when it comes to getting a location for me to rest up and get ready for the race tomorrow. Meanwhile, folks, another race is going to be going on this weekend. Of course, the NASCAR Cup Series and Xfinity Series doubleheader at Auto Club Speedway. And now, folks, let's keep all the house cleaning is done. Now it's time to bring on our special guest for the evening for this episode. He does some things for the Pit Box Press here. None other than Phil Spain. Phil, how you doing today?
All right. Happy to be here.
This was kind of a last minute kind of deal put together there, but I'm glad you were able to take some time from your busy schedule to join me tonight, so I appreciate that.
Of course. You had messaged me a few weeks ago, and just within traveling and all of that, messages got a little crossed and backed up, but happy to help.
No problem. Yeah, I've been traveling for work for most of the day and had to get on the road for a trail race that I'm doing tomorrow. So it's been a kind of a wacky day, but here we are chatting NASCAR. A little bit about yourself. So you're kind of you're this is your first appearance on the podcast for our listeners that don't know you very well. Tell us a little bit about your his background a little bit and how you got involved in NASCAR.
Well, I became a fan of NASCAR probably I'd say around about 1996, 1997, around there. And it basically started out by me just seeing like cars on the TV and little kids go for like Hot Wheels and things like that. That was the first time I'd ever really seen racing on TV. I was hooked from the start, and the rest has been kind of history with that. But as far as like journalism within NASCAR goes, probably for about the last 15 years or so, on and off, I've been doing a little bit of writing. And most recently, a couple of years ago, I got together with a group of friends and we started Pit Box Press. So that's basically where my NASCAR coverage has been.
All right, and how many of you guys fill on staff at the Pit Box Press? I want to say I keep wanting to say press box because I'm so used to saying it that way. But how many are on staff with you on that?
Right now we have about, let's see, about 5 or 6 full-time people. Some people we do have on part-time, and then we have a actual accredited photographer that makes it to the races most weekends, and he's able to get us some galleries and shots for most of the drivers or for our articles. So right now I'd say somewhere about 6 or 7 people. So
Okay, all right, not too bad. Not too bad. So obviously we've been following each other on Twitter for several years or a couple years now. Okay, I'm gonna get straight to this. So who was your favorite driver when you did we obviously you talked about your start watching cars on the TV screen. Did you have a favorite driver when you started watching, or were you just a big fan in general of the sport?
Probably like the first year or so, or first half season, I really didn't have anybody. But as I got more into it, I became a huge Jeff Gordon fan. Probably from about the last, like his probably like last 3 or so championships, and all the way through till he retired. And it was just, I don't know, I guess it was the bright colors that got me. And just like any kid. But I really didn't realize, I guess probably until I got a little bit older, just how much people kind of resented Jeff Gordon, with being Dale Senior fans. But it was fun for me. I loved it. He won a lot, and he wasn't in the back of the pack that often,
No,
so.
he was. No, he wasn't. Yeah, my one of my brothers was a Jeff Gordon fan as well. So yeah, he wasn't. He was definitely a front runner. That's for sure. And winning a lot of races. Where are you originally from, Phil?
I was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm currently in Owings Mills, Maryland, which is probably about 25 minutes away from the city, so.
All right, not too bad, not too bad. So, you're just coming from, I know we've interacted a little bit between a couple of weeks ago and right now. You and your, I want to say your, you can correct me, your wife, right?
My
Girlfriend?
girlfriend,
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, that's what I thought. I knew he was gonna say that. But you and your girlfriend just coming out from a big road trip in Daytona. How was that?
It was everything that I ever dreamed of. It was my first, well, both of our first times in Daytona, and of course our first time at the 500, and first time I really had been at a track that big. I've gone to, like places like Charlotte, or, you know, even at Charlotte with the Roval, and most of the short tracks like Bristol and Richmond and Dover. But, you know, Daytona was a different animal altogether. And, yeah, it was incredible. We left on Wednesday, and we got there about Wednesday, about early Wednesday evening, and once we got there, we went straight to qualifying, so that was fun.
Phil Spain from the Pit Box Press here on the 3Wide NASCAR Podcast with EG3 with you, aka EG3. My name's Eddie Greeter III. For those of you new to the podcast, welcome aboard to the show here on a special edition of the podcast. So obviously all three divisions raced last weekend. So you went straight from qualifying. Did you see all, besides the 500 obviously, did you see all the trucks and the Xfinity Series action that happened down there?
We did not, but we did go after qualifying. We did do the duels the next night, and then Saturday afternoon I had the pleasure of being in the pits for the ARCA race for Mullins Racing. They're a small team. They had the number 3 and the 03 in Saturday afternoon's race, and it was just fun being down there with some friends and taking it all in. That was my first, well, of course, would this be my first time at Daytona, but that was the first time I had really been in, you know, a pit box for ARCA. So that was neat to see how smaller teams and smaller operations run compared to, you know, like the bigger counterparts in the Cup Series or the teams.
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective. Yeah, you always see the obviously a perfect example, like you said, the Cup Series has these big teams like the Hendrick Motorsports, the Joe Gibbs Racings of the world, the Penske's, and just seeing it from the opposite end when you have these smaller budget teams out there. So it's very fascinating that you were able to do that. That's awesome that you're able to do that. Now, I have not been this was a long time ago, but I did go to a couple of 500s. I have not been back down there since they reconfigured the stands and everything like that. So I'm hoping to go back. It's kind of on my bucket list to go back and to see another Daytona 500 race at some point in the distant future. Right. So, yeah, I'm glad you guys had an opportunity to go down there and make a big trip out of it. That's a big, good deal. Prior to that, did you go to, okay, first off, have you gone to any other places, tracks before Daytona?
I'd been, well, my first NASCAR race I ever attended was in Dover, and I believe it was either late 2000, no, it was 2005 when I went. And Dover is only about an hour and a half from where I live at, so it was always perfect. We would just cross the Bay Bridge and go over and, you know, spend a day in Dover and drive back that same night. I had stopped going for a little while. Basically, my parents started getting a little bit older, and even though I could have gone, I would have been going by myself. I had a girlfriend at the time when I could have been going by myself that wasn't in the NASCAR or, you know, racing at all. And I really didn't have that many friends that were in the NASCAR up until recently, but and then within the last year, you know, me and my current girlfriend, we kind of decided, you know, hey, we've got all of these tracks within a, you know, a close radius that we can get to, you know, like Dover and Richmond and Bristol. Bristol's a little bit more of a drive, but it's still, you know, it's still within 2 hours from where she lives at, so it's perfect. So we basically did all of the short tracks last year, both Martinsville, the summer Bristol, we did both Charlotte races, and that was it. So it was a packed season last year, and pretty much it'll be much of the same this year.
Yeah, all those tracks up there in the Northeast. Yeah, there's a lot of tracks up there. New Hampshire, Pocono, Dover. Yeah, Bristol. That's kind of a little bit of a drive, like you said. Yeah, so all those tracks up there. Yeah, it's pretty tight, distance wise. Besides that, but yeah, I try. Well, I've been going out here. I've been going to Kansas Speedway for the last 6, 7 years straight. When I lived in Florida, I went to Daytona a lot and Talladega. But yeah, I've been going out here to Kansas Speedway for a long time now. It's pretty fun. It's only 2 hours away from where I live currently, so in Manhattan, Kansas, where I currently live. But it's not that bad of a drive, obviously. Very close. And so definitely want to make those trips. But I considered going down to Circuit of Americas. That's about a 8 hour drive. Also, there's the obviously the inaugural Chicago Street Race coming up this summer up there in Chicago, Illinois. I won't be able to go because I already have prior commitments for a few weeks before that. So, but yeah, there's some of those tracks that have not that I haven't gone to yet over there. But yeah, it's always nice to have to take the time to plan those things out and check those out, make a good experience out of them. Speaking of, oh, before I touch on that, obviously, for me and you, since we're obviously African Americans, and we're big into NASCAR, we're celebrating Black History Month, and we're big fans of Bubba Wallace, despite me being Martin Truex Jr. fan, me myself first, and then once he finally hangs it up, I will Bubba Wallace will be my number one driver. But how did you become a Bubba fan? This might be a dumb question, but how did you become a Bubba Wallace fan? Was it go ahead, go ahead.
No, go ahead, ask the question all the way up.
Yeah, how did you become a Bubba Wallace fan? Was it because there was finally someone of our color with a personality, or just someone finally that, hey, you know, he can relate to us a little bit? So how did you become a Bubba fan?
Well, it's funny, honestly, about, what was it? Yeah, I'd say it was actually 11 years ago, because my girlfriend, I sent her the tweet back in May of last year, but I found a tweet where I congratulated Bubba on winning a race at Richmond when he was in the what was then the K&N series. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of Bubba. You know, I've heard, you know, we've had other, you know, African American drivers, but some of them haven't, you know, always panned out, or they don't get as far as they possibly could, you know, be it because of sponsorship, or, you know, because, you know, or a team, you know, folds or something. And I just remember seeing him and just seeing how happy he was to be driving race cars, and how he was, you know, he didn't want to be seen as like the Black driver. He wanted to be seen as a race car driver, and, you know, or a race car driver that just happened to be Black. And, you know, I started following him from, you know, when he would make little spot starts here and there for Joe Gibbs Racing. And then when he moved up to Roush Fenway at the time in the Xfinity series before his funding got cut there, you know, with sponsorship. And, you know, on up to him driving for Richard Petty Motorsports. So, you know, it's been a period of basically watching him progress and just seeing him achieve the things that he set out to do. You know, I mean, it hadn't always been easy. He hadn't always had the fastest cars, or, you know, the backing that he obviously could. But now to see him from where he started at, you know, it's just always been a happy moment for me. You know, because a lot of people, you know, you'll see on Twitter, and I'm sure you've probably had those fair share of people that say things, or you see things that they say about him, and it's like, you know, yeah, obviously, if you looked at where he started at and where he grew up at and where he, you know, where he is today, you know, you'll realize that this is the same kid that was hungry for an opportunity. You know, he just says the same things that other drivers say, but, you know, when it comes out of his mouth, it's considered to be, you know.
Be bad or bad or something like that. Or
right, correct.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been quite the roller coaster of a journey for Bubba. Yeah, I first heard of him when he started, I believe it was the Camping World Truck Series, when he was with Kyle Busch Motorsports. I know I've heard there were rumors of him driving in any K&M series. I heard of that, heard of stories about that for sure, and him coming up through the NASCAR Drive for Diversity program. As well, so it's been quite the roller coaster from where he started, and then the progression he made, winning a lot of races for Kyle Busch Motorsports, getting his first win at Martinsville, how historic that was, and then seeing him move up to Xfinity, and yeah, like you said, the whole funding cutting out from Ross Fenway at the time there, which kind of sucked actually, because he was at one point was top, if I remember correctly, Phil, I think he was in top six in the points at one point.
Yeah,
if I remember that correctly. But yeah, that kind of sucked there, and then he kind of went through a couple of things, some on off deals there, and then finally got the nod to go to Cup Series, and then the impressive run I kind of forgot about. the six race deal there with Richard Petty Motorsports, which is now obviously Legacy. The rest is history from there, which is 2311, which is where he is right now, obviously, with corners Michael Jordan and Denny Hamlin are at right now. And of course, I want to go back to Bubba's first win in the Cup Series at Talladega, and me, you probably have know a couple of folks that are Bubba fans as well on Twitter as well, as you probably know. What were your reactions when Bubba finally got that first win off his back at Talladega a couple years ago? What were your reactions to that?
More than anything, it was relief, because earlier in that season, you know, it was, with that being the first season for 2311, you know, all eyes were on the team, and you know, when they interviewed Michael Jordan at the beginning of the season and him saying, you know, oh, Bubba can win two or three races this season, or, you know, I expect that, or, you know, these items. And to me, it was like, you know, oof, does he understand, you know, NASCAR is a week to week thing, you know, you know, it seems like it's going to be possible, but at the same time, this is a brand new team. It's going to take some, you know, getting together, taking some gelling. There's going to be growing pains. And, you know, for me, it was more relief that people could stop saying, hey, look, you know, this is, you know, he's just the Drive for Diversity guy. He's just, you know, he's out there just filling a seat, filling a quota, that type of stuff. But when people say that, what they don't notice is they don't look at the second place finishes in the Daytona 500. They don't look at how good he runs on super speedways, you know. And like I told a lot of people when the race happened, and, you know, the circumstances with him winning it, with it being a rain delay, I'm sure that's not how he wanted to win his first race. There have been plenty of drivers throughout history that won a race during a rain delay, and they counted all the same in the in the record books. Those drivers have the trophy in their trophy case. They don't give that stuff back.
Nope.
So for me, it was just like, you know, I'm relieved for him. I'm relieved for that team. And, you know, I didn't have that thought that he was going to go out there, set the world on fire, and prove that this team was here, because, you know, I've paid attention to the sport for a long time. So I knew for a fact how things were going to go, and I was happy that he was able to accomplish that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a huge accomplishment when he finally got that win there. And yeah, all wins count no matter how you get them, whether it's you're not the fastest car, whether you are the fastest car, or pit strategy, or what the delay, you know. All the wins aren't all the same, so it all counts for something. Phil Spain here joining me on the 3Wide NASCAR podcast with EG3. Phil does some work with the Pit Box Press. How do you feel about Tyler Reddick, Bubba Wallace, and Tyler Reddick? Obviously, Kurt Busch is still there, but unfortunately, he had to scale back due to his unfortunate injury last year during qualifying at Pocono. What are your thoughts going into the season about Bubba being paired up with Tyler? I think it's going to be a good mesh.
Yeah, and I believe it will too. When you look at Bubba and Tyler, with them being somewhat close in age and kind of being more, more matched, where they understand and they probably both can see the same issues going on. Whereas when Kurt was there last year, and still is, with just more kind of in a mentor role. But, like they say, they bought Kurt over there to mentor Bubba. Mm-hmm. And you saw it even when Kurt was out of the car after Pocono, and when he could be at the track or when he could be at the command center, how they were able to improve. And they did that from the second half of the season on, and they were able to get that win at Pocono, Kansas, where they were able, to say as an organization, hey, we swept both races,
Yep.
Right. And I think Tyler, like Denny calls Tyler the franchise. I haven't always gone that far to say that. Sometimes when I hear it, it sometimes seems like a slight at Bubba, but it's definitely not. And having, interacted with Tyler at the track and things like that, he's a great person to have around. He's going to be part of the future for that team. And while it's going to look like this team was built for Bubba, no, I think both of those two, they'll have success. A lot of people want to compare stats on how Kyle Busch is going to look at RCR versus how Tyler looks at 2311, and honestly, I think in both cases, it's one of those situations where you want both drivers to kind of just gel with their teams and not worry about who's going to have, the better results, because it's going to be growing pains for both. There are going to be weeks where, they hit the setup correctly, and then you're going to have that week where, you might be running 15 for 16. And you just bring it home, just bringing the car home. But, I think as a group, the sky is the limit for them. But you just hope that, you don't have another unfortunate incident like you had with Kurt. But, I see nothing but success for the group. And I think Tyler will bring out the best in Bubba and, vice versa.
Yeah, and they have a good opportunity to do that this weekend when the Cup Series in California at the Auto Club Speedway, the last time we're going to see, at least until 2025, with the new layout of the short track, which is very interesting enough there. So Reddick will have a good opportunity this weekend to run well, to bounce back, and I think Bubba as well will bounce back as well. Bubba was up there. Bubba had an up and down race at the 500 there, got tapped from behind from Truex, who got hit from Hamlin there, unfortunately hit the wall, kind of set him back quite a bit, but battled back, got on the lead lap, and he was all of a sudden he was right there in the top 10 there with a couple laps to go, and obviously the race went in overtime, and Bubba unfortunately got caught up in that last wreck there. to ruin the chances of rallying for a top 10 finish. But I see Bubba and Tyler, that whole entire organization continuing to get better. I was there at the first race of camp. I was not there last year when Bubba won, unfortunately. But I was there when Kurt won last spring there. And that team really came alive there. And it was unfortunate there that Kurt got injured. It would have been nice to see how Kurt would have finished out the year, because I think that that team would have made a deep run in the postseason last year. But things happen, and you gotta just roll with the punches there for that organization. So yeah, I'm excited for the organization this year and see where they can take that momentum into 2023. Speaking of small team, well, actually, before I touch on that, I did have Phil Jesse Wuji on his podcast a couple years ago, EG3 alum on his podcast. Great conversation. Obviously, he's taking the steps to trying to lead more African Americans / more people of color into the sport of NASCAR, and we're seeing that with a lot of the fans, as you know now. So, what are your thoughts on Jesse Wuji? Yes, he's a back of the pack driver, and he's had his share of issues. We know that, but Jesse Wuji is really taking the steps to invite others of color like myself and other folks, Nick Sanchez of the world, and things like that, to have success in NASCAR. So, what are your thoughts on that? And Emmett Smith coming on board in NASCAR.
Like Jesse, because he just did an interview a couple days ago with ABC News, and like you say, it's kind of long overdue. You know, when I was a little kid, you know, being black and being a NASCAR fan was kind of like oil and water. You know, it was like it was something you didn't see that often.
Yeah.
You know, unless you probably, I guess, grew up in the Deep South and, you know, it was something that your family got into. And even when I would go to Dover as a teenager, you know, I'd be maybe one of maybe three or four black people that I would see, you know, as I'm going to my seat. But I'll say over the last 3 or 4 years or so, and especially, I guess, with the rise of Bubba and, you know, other people of color coming into the sport, you know, it's a more diverse group, you know. And I noticed last year when I went to the Summer Richmond race, there were a lot more, you know, African-American families or, you know, mixed-race families that were coming to the track. You know, some of them had Bubba stuff on, or some of them were repping their favorite drivers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the good thing about Richmond is that it's located within, like, almost like a black community anyway. And that's the same with Martinsville. Martinsville actually is within a black community as well. You know, to be able to see all of these, you know, different fans from different backgrounds and nationalities come through, it was long time. You know, it's long been time for it to not just be the good old boy, you know, Southern sport. Whereas, you know, when you put on a helmet to get into a race car, you know, nobody can tell what color your skin is. Mm-hmm. The only thing, you know, you need to really worry about is, you know, their quality behind the wheel, their behind the wheel talent. Whereas, you know, like, and with Jesse, like you say, you know, yeah, sure, sometimes he has backmarker, you know, moments. You know, it was good to see him run great at Daytona last summer. But Jesse's gone about it the right way. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going about it where he's using his platform to kind of inform people, hey, look, you can do this. You know, there isn't a limit on, you know, what you can do just because of your skin color. You know, and it's like I've said in other interviews and, you know, other podcasts that I've been on, NASCAR is it's sorely lacked for a long time that point where, they made people of color or people of different nationalities feel welcome, whereas now with Drive for Diversity or, NASCAR Next, they can go and get these kids out of urban areas. You look at a kid like Roger Carruth. Roger. With Roger, he went on, he was on iRacing. He fell in love with the sport a long time ago. And then now to be able to be mentored by Bubba or, other Cup Series drivers or, it's something that kind of warms my heart because it's like, where was this, when I was growing up,
Right, yeah.
when I wanted to get into racing and, it instead of me being told, oh, you're too old to go, looking into getting into racing, there was this opportunity. So it's wonderful. It's beyond time, but I'm glad NASCAR addressed it. Even with some of the people that they bring into the track, different football players or people from other sports that, may not understand racing, but by the time that they're done with the race weekend, it's an opportunity that they want to seek out again.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep, yeah, yeah. I'm glad you brought up Raj's name because that was the next guy I was going to mention. he's been on my podcast a couple of times. He's been on my podcast a couple of times, and just to watch him in his growth, in his development through the early ranks of NASCAR as well, it's been fun to watch him kind of grow and see his personality shine out a little bit more as well. And I've had several other of the young African American guys on this podcast from the Drive for Diversity program as well on here, and they chat. It's nice to listen to their stories of how they got into this sport, So I'm going to have several of them back, but it's the plan this year, like always. So to check in on them and see what the progress is. So NASCAR is definitely heading in that right direction for sure. So with the Drive for Diversity program, if I can talk in other avenues as well. You probably didn't hear this, but you were at the race, but obviously I watched the 500 on a TV screen last week, and they showed Larry Fitzgerald was there down in Daytona and a couple others. But yeah, there's been a lot of football players. Alvin Kamara taking some type of part-time sponsorship as well. So Saints player. Yeah, it's been fun seeing him getting involved and getting their hands on a sport. So it's been quite the ride and the joy to see other folks just like us that they want to know more and they want to get in the sport as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
Phil Spain, who does work from the Pit Box Press, joining me here on tonight's special edition of the 3-1 NASCAR podcast with EG3 Eddie Greer III. This podcast I'm recording is on the road once again at a location that I cannot explain, but I am close to my destination, for I am going to be running a half marathon on trail in the morning. So that is why I am on the road, folks. Usually I'm in Manhattan, Kansas, where I currently live at, recording the podcast, but this podcast for the second time this year on the road. I like doing these. I'm beginning to like these doing these things on the road. But anyways, speaking of small teams, Phil, back to the 500 real quickly. Speaking of small teams, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. winning the 500 there, in another guy that gets to share the spotlight. Not just Ricky Stenhouse, but Brad Doherty gets an opportunity. Yeah. He's a 500 Daytona 500 owner champion as well, so he has a step on Michael Jordan at least as far as that's concerned as well. Right. So how big is that? I said on the reaction pod that I did a few days ago that I kind of overlooked Ricky Stenhouse a little bit there. It's probably because he stayed out of trouble. He's usually the one that causes trouble there, but he stayed patient and struck at the right time. And Ricky's very, very good at these type of tracks. And the 47 struck gold, took advantage of a plan that went bad for Richard Childress Racing. I still don't understand what happened there. But I explained that in the reaction episode that I recorded. But what were your thoughts there on how that all played out?
Well, it was like I tweeted out Sunday, the laps were winding down, and at least when we got under like about five or six laps to go, I tweeted out, I can't believe that they were okay with just riding around for that long period of time with how these cars work on super speedways. And wouldn't you know it, about, maybe 30 seconds later, that's when, the 3 and the 8 decided to pull out and go for it. And I was like, well, now we're probably going to get that normal 2 or 3 lap to go caution. And sure enough, we did. But, yeah, that plan kind of went sour for RCR. And then, for Kyle, you hate it for him.
Yeah.
Probably his best shot, if any, over the years, for him to make that 500, pretty much cap that Hall of Fame, that display when he gets into the Hall of Fame, Daytona 500 trophy. But as far as Stenhouse goes, I think a lot of people, I've heard more now, a lot of people had him as more of a surprise pick. For me, I honestly expected him to somehow get caught up in one of those wrecks. Probably, and like you say, he's had a penchant for starting a few, but he's also been really, really good on the super speedways over his career. So, all he needed was the faith in him from his team, which they had written in the car to tell him that they believed in him. Mm-hmm. They told him that pre-race. So, for that to happen was I don't want to say it's a shock win, basically, because, like I say, how good Ricky has been over his career on the super speedways. But, for that team, like they say, they only have 47 members on that team all together. Over the past couple of years of them downsizing from two cars, now down to one, focusing all of their efforts and where they're getting there. I believe they're getting engines from Hendrick. Like they say, they could have sold that charter a couple seasons ago and just moved on. But, the Geschichters and Brad, they built that moment, and they deserve that moment. And I'm, head over heels happy for Brad, because you've seen his love for the sport, and he hasn't always had the most success over the years, but when he does get those moments where he's able to go to victory lane, like when he had Marcos Ambrose or AJ Allmendinger, those type of guys, when you have them and you got that opportunity to see just how excited and how happy it makes him to be there. And, it brings me back, because I'm a fan of watching classic races, and I forget, it's even one of the Daytona 500s or another race. And they talked to a young Brad Doherty that was, playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers at the time. And just seeing him excited to be there and how he was excited to support Richard Petty, and now for him to be able to say he shares something with, Richard Petty and being a championship car owner, a Daytona 500 car owner, it's amazing. And for it to happen, during Black History Month too, as poetic of a moment, as it's been. So.
Credit goes to the Geschichters and Brad Doherty for sticking it out with Ricky Stenhouse. They could have easily sold their charter or could have moved on from them. they're running not so well, but it pays off when you stick with a driver, you believe in him, and that's what the 47 ownership did. And I read about it, heard about it on a couple of shows as well. And yeah, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., you know you're going to have to deal with him on Talladega, Daytona. You can throw Atlanta in the mix now with that style of racetrack now as well. So it was a good, to not hear from him until the last, five laps of the race there. And oh my, there's the 47 right there. Where you come from? We didn't hear anything all day from him.
But at this rate, you might as well say that's the key to winning a super speedway race at this point. Just keep your car clean and know when it's time to go.
Yep. That's what it is now. Yep. You know the wrecks are to come at the end of these races. You know you're going to get the overtime finish. It's pretty much almost 90%, 95% of the time you get that overtime finish on the plate track. So you just got to try to stay out of trouble and be right there in the mix. And that's what the 47 did. And there they are, Daytona 500 champions, folks. Eddie Greer, EG3, 3-Wide NASCAR Podcast with EG3. Big thanks to Phil Spain here for a few more minutes here from the Pit Box Press for joining me on this special edition of the 3-1 NASCAR Podcast with EG3. And folks, I do not know the number of this. This will go out this weekend. The last weekend of February, of course, February being Black History Month as well. This has been a good episode. So turning the page, I was going to say one other thing, but maybe it'll come back to me towards the end. All right, so from there, now the series shifts over out west for the races, right? So what do you expect? I'm going to actually stay with the 47 here for a second here. So what do you expect? Because Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in last year's, I went back to see where he finished last year in California. He finished in the top 10, 10th, I believe it was, there. So can JTG Doherty Racing, Ricky Stenhouse, can they carry that momentum? We've seen in past, after the 500, guys that have won for the first time kind of struggle a little bit for a while before kind of regaining their rhythm a little bit. So how can they maintain this momentum? As Ricky said in his press conference there, they're not done yet. So I'm anxious to see what this 47 team is going to do come this weekend on Sunday.
The hope is, you don't have the, Daytona 500 hangover. Which, it comes with winning that race. Basically, you've got more press than you normally have to do. You got breakfast you have to go to. You got appearances you have to make. You got late night appearances that you make. And, it almost takes you away from having the time to be able to go, go sit in the simulator for a little bit or attend a debrief on, what's coming up or whatnot. But one thing that I kind of noticed, and like you say, he finished in the top 10 last year at Fontana. And I think it's possible that he could, like you say, they've said that they're not done yet. We hope that that's, true. Their Speedway package was pretty good last year. He was, if he didn't get caught up in somebody else's mess or, if it wasn't a flat tire or anything like that, he showed ample opportunities that, that team can finish up front. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to not having to share the resources with a second car. And I think that's helped them more than anything. That now they can focus their efforts all on that 47 car, and they can put money, and especially with this next gen car, it seems like the more information or more research that you're able to do, the better. Even though they're spec parts and whatnot, but just having it where now he can concentrate on not having to share information with another team or, being able to get that simulator time, So I think I'm cautiously optimistic that he does finish. I would say I wouldn't, you know, guarantee a win or anything like that, but
right.
I'd say at least, you know, somewhere between 5th and 10th, you know. A top 10 is possible, but, you know, it's all got to come together this weekend. He's got to kind of put it behind him that, hey, look, you know, your legacy is cemented now as a Daytona 500 winner, but there's, you know, 35 more of these things you gotta get through.
Yep.
You know, you can't rest on your laurels just because you're locked into the playoffs now. But it's all about making sure that you keep doing consistent finishes that make sure that you're not playoff driver number 16.
Right.
Whereas, yeah, you know, where you should be, you know, playoff driver number, you know, number 7, number 9, somewhere where you're comfortable in that, where you can feel like, you know, hey, I got a little room to breathe, but, you know, once the playoffs get here, it's, you know, it's go time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we saw last year with the debut of this current car, the next-gen car, we saw a lot of variety winners last year, and we saw a couple of big-name drivers not make the playoffs. It is going to be interesting to see with year two of this car, is this going to be the big teams, as we talked about earlier tonight, get more of a stranglehold on it, or will some of the other teams like a JTG Doherty Racing, a Legacy Racing, can get a hold and try to get the victory lane? Yeah, so we'll see if Ricky Stenhouse Jr. can get another win. Yeah, that would be great for that organization. They can, but yeah, we are one race done out of 35 races, so a lot of miles still yet to be put on these race cars as we move through, especially this weekend, the start of the West Coast Swing. Real quick, Phil, since the trucks are off here, Austin Hill, changing gears real quick. Austin Hill, he's become a beast on Speedway Racing. He won another Daytona race last weekend there with that big finish there, sitting there having to wait, like, it felt like 2 hours to see who won that race. But Austin Hill, you know, has made a statement now that you're going to have to deal with him on those type of tracks now. And now you have also obviously him, Cole Custer's down there in the Xfinity Series. I think he's one of the favorites this weekend in the Xfinity Series, and at least once the weather clears this weekend. But give me your thoughts on what are your thoughts on the Xfinity Series this year?
Well, it looks like it's going to be a closer. Well, the past couple of years, you'll say with Xfinity, it's been down to the wire at Phoenix. But you know, you've had where the driver that you expected to win the championship kind of chokes it away. But now you've got, you know, your top guys up in cup now. You know, you've lost Ty. You know, you've lost Noah. And now it's more like, you know, where is the dominance going to come from? And like you say, on super speedways, right now it looks like RCR and Austin Hill. You know, those guys, they've put an emphasis on the super speedways the same way, you know, RCR has always done. You know, it's just all about getting, continuing on with having good finishes outside of super speedways for them. So you look at the JRM, the guys, you know, now that Noah's gone, you know, with Brandon Jones there.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Jones picking up that seat. Can he compete just as well as Noah was doing? Can, you know, can Josh Berry, you know, get over that hump? Can he, you know, take the consistency of what he had last year and turn it into a into the championship, you know? But the thing about the Xfinity Series, with everything that comes down to, you know, Martinsville for them, you know, it might not be that driver that dominates. If he has a bad playoff, you know, it really opens up the door for that driver that maybe won one race to go out and be the best finishing driver within the within the four that'll be running for the championship. But right now, I'd say in terms of like power, of course, you gotta say JRM. Joe Gibbs Racing, to me, I think now they're at a point where they're in flux. You know, you've got more drivers than you do cars that have them racing. You know, that's why the 19 is so chopped up the way it is this year. Yeah, with guys like Matt Snyder or, you know, Ryan Truex or, you know, so I would say it'll somewhat come down between JRM and hopefully you would hope for Junior's sake that maybe it's all four of his cars, you know, that end up going for a championship. Maybe it's Justin Allgaier's year finally. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. There's a lot of intrigue to me because sometimes, you know, there's a joke that somebody came up with when cup racing, you know, especially with the package that we ran with the Gen 6 and somewhat, you know, now with Gen 7, the joke was that Xfinity Series, those cars drive like how we expected the Gen 4 and the Gen 5s to drive. And the joke was always that Xfinity is the premier racing series in NASCAR today, you know, in terms of excitement. So, you know, I wouldn't expect anything less, you know, like they say, names are made. And, you know, will it be a young kid, you know, maybe a Sammy Smith or, you know, somebody new that comes along and says, hey, you know, I'm here now, you know, let me show that I prove I belong in the higher series. But, you know, there's going to be veterans, like you say, you got Cole Custer back down there. He's out to prove something, I think. And I think whenever they decide to go racing, I don't think they're going to get it in tomorrow. And not with that whatever system they got going on out there, but you know, I expect him, you know, he won there last year, so I expect him to come through and probably in the same race car probably go and you know, pick up the win.
That's who I got on top of my list. Yeah, it's Cole Custer going back down there. Didn't really have much success. Yes, he had that one win in the Cup Series a few years ago at Kentucky. But yeah, other than that, he's kind of had his share of some ups and downs. And now he's back down to prove himself that, I can win some of these races. And we know he can, especially on those type of racetracks. So whenever that race does get going, yeah, I expect him to be a factor. You brought up Justin Allgaier's name. And he's been at this for a while. I don't know how many years now in the Xfinity Series. He's been up in the Cup Series a little bit, but not like your normal like driver would be, right? You're in the Xfinity Series for a couple years, and then all of a sudden you stay in the Cup Series for a while. But that's not just Justin Allgaier's case. He's been the veterans of veterans when it comes to the Xfinity Series, and he's been on a lot of the short ends of the stick when it comes to battling for a championship. And that's an interesting thing that you brought up, the Junior Motorsports there with all four cars. That is a dream scenario for Dale Jr. If that is good, that's a good possibility. All of his cars always getting the final eight. It's just the final four that's the most difficult, whether a JGR car stands in the way or a Stuart Haas car stands in the way of that. So yeah, it's gonna be really interesting to see what cards shake out through 2023 as far as the Xfinity Series goes. There, Brandon Jones is now on the team now with Menards as longtime sponsor now. So we'll see if Brandon can win races over there for Dale Jr. as well. And Chandler Smith makes the move from the Truck Series to the Colleague 16. He had a good run last week as well. So there's a lot of guys out there that wanted to prove their worth. So it's gonna be a fun year in the Xfinity series, I think.
Yeah, sure will.
Yep. All right, wow, you gave us a lot more, Phil, than me, a lot more than expected there. But this was a great conversation. I will end it with this. We talked about earlier on this podcast tonight, going to different racetracks and experiencing, you know, new experiences. You have any more plans to go on to races this year? What are your plans looking like for 2023?
Well, for 2023, right now, my next race will be at Richmond in early April. Then a couple weeks later, I'll be at Martinsville. Then I'll take about almost a month off. I'll do Dover, and then I'll be at the 600 in May. Yeah, that'll be my second year going to that, so I'm looking forward to that. And let's see, there's one race that we're trying to see if we can make it out to, but I don't want to lift the lid on that too yet. But
all right.
Possibly may try to go to Bristol in the summertime, and then finish up with the Roval and Martinsville.
Good stuff. Looking forward to keeping an eye on that and everything else. With Phil Spain from the Pit Box Press here in the 3Wide NASCAR Podcast, EG3. Phil, where can we follow you on social media?
All right. Well, I'm on Twitter at Phil in Espanol. That's PHILENESPANOL. Or just search Phil Spain in your search bar. You'll find me. I have the same handle on Instagram as well. So. That's about where I'm at, and of course you can read all of my articles and kind of like bi-weekly columns with Pitbox Press.
Alright, sounds good. Phil Spain, ladies and gentlemen, here on the 3Wide NASCAR Podcast with EG3. Phil, thank you again for hopping on boards. Finally, well, we follow each other again on Twitter for the last couple of years. It's finally finally nice to speak to you here tonight on this edition of the podcast on Black History Month. Brad Doherty getting the Daytona 500 champ. It's been a great conversation, and hopefully we can down the road, maybe towards the end of the season, we can do this again sometime. Have another good conversation.
Of course. Sounds great. I'd love to do it.
All right. We'll be right back.
to the 3 Live NASCAR Podcast with EG3. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. We'll see you next time going 3 Wide.